Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Friday show. Here we are, here we are, here we are. A lot of stuff to get to today. A lot of news to cover with Trump still his early days in the White House, so he still got that sledgehammer out and he's swinging it at everything holy. We're going to get into that. I'm going to give you your Justice Democrats update, give you some new numbers for the Justice Democrats. Some great stuff to talk about there. I'll give you some more background into that as well. And later on in the show, we got Richard Spencer undermines his ideology in about a minute. and Hillary Clinton and what her plans are moving forward. So jam-packed show, wall to wall. Let's get started here, and we're going to do that with your Justice Democrats update. So I have an update for everybody on Justice Democrats. Before I start, allow me to apologize because I pulled a Bernie Sanders today. I didn't comb my hair. I woke up, I forgot, I was busy, and now I'm looking at myself in the monitor like, ooh. But what are you going to do? It happens. I don't think you guys tune in for the hair, if I'm not mistaken. So, again, for those of you who maybe don't know about Justice Democrats yet, I highly recommend you go watch my initial segment on it, which is over an hour and 15 minutes long. And in that segment, I lay out the platform for Justice Democrats and what we represent and what we're trying to do moving forward. So it gives you a really good idea, a good sense of what we stand for. And obviously, we launched this in conjunction with the Young Turks, who have a massive reach and even bigger reach than I do. They have over 3 million YouTube subscribers. We have 450,000 or so. But the idea was, let's go ahead and muster up the progressives and the liberals in the country, the principled people, and get rid of the corporate Democrats and get rid of the establishment Democrats and build a movement from the ground up in order to do that. And I wanted to give everybody a little bit of, you know, what went down behind the scenes when we launched this, so you understand where we're all coming from and what the philosophy is and stuff like that. So first of all, let me go ahead and give you these updated numbers, and they are colossal. They're out of this world. I think we're onto something here. So for sign-ups, so people who are supporting Justice Democrats, people who cared enough to sign their name in support of it. So these are effectively the Justice Democrats. You have so far, remember, it hasn't even been four full days yet, 78,000. I don't know who's keeping track. I don't know if anybody ever did keep track, but that might be a record. Is there any other movement where you launched it and that quickly it gets to those kinds of numbers? I don't know. In fact, I don't know if Bernie Sanders' campaign itself, when he launched, within 4 days, there were that many people behind his movement. Because I don't know if you guys remember, but there were pictures of Bernie's early rallies, because he really is, unless you're a political junkie, you didn't know him. He's an obscure senator from Vermont, but there were pictures of his early rallies, and it was like four people sitting in lawn chairs, and Bernie up there ranting about money and politics and income inequality. So he effectively built up this grassroots movement, and now there's a populist left feeling in the country that's just waiting to get tapped into. And I think we may have started that here. I think we may be graduated to the next level, and we're building a sustainable movement to do the right thing here and get rid of the corporate Democrats. Now, in terms of how much has been raised so far, now remember, all of this, small money donors, all of this, working people, whether they be teachers, whether they be union guys, whether they be accountants. So this is, we don't allow donations from corporations and billionaires. But so far, $270,000 has been raised. Now, where does that money go to? This is a very important question. First and foremost, I am taking $0.00 for being a part of Justice Democrats. I wouldn't have it any other way. I don't want a dime. I don't want a penny. I don't want anything. It's totally nonprofit. The same thing goes for Jenk at TYT. The same thing goes for everybody that's doing this. So that money is going towards building the infrastructure and actually running the candidates, which leads to my next point. Justice Democrats is registered as what's called a hybrid PAC. So that allows the money. So we raise the money, and again, doesn't come to me, doesn't come to any of us. It's actually going to be used to run these candidates. Now that's, I mean, you can't beat that. We're building grassroots from the bottom up, and this is the framework and this is the guidance that I think everybody wanted, because we all probably had similar feelings right after the election, but there wasn't a way to harness it. Well, now the framework is there to harness it, and again, I have to give a tremendous amount of credit to Shoykot and Zach, because these are Bernie campaign officials, top Bernie campaign officials, who got together with myself and with Jenk of TYT, and we ironed out all the details, and they dot the I's, they cross the T's, they vet the candidates, they train the candidates, they run the candidates. They're the amount of work and the kind of work that they put in is work that I am simply incapable of doing. I don't have the time, I don't have the skill set, and this would be impossible without them at the helm effectively leading it. So I have nothing but love and adoration and credit for those guys, and they deserve all of it. Now, in terms of how many donors we have, 11,700 people have contributed so far. But perhaps the most important number to me is the number of actual nominations we have. So if you go to justicedemocrats.com, you can sign your name in support of it. You can donate. But also you can nominate a candidate. You can say, hey, I want you guys to look into me, or I want you guys to look into my buddy, who I think would be good at representing the community. And then there's the process in place where these people get vetted. And the best candidates are picked, and then we actually run them against the corporatist Democrats. We're not playing around, man. Like, that's the thing that was so exciting to me about this, is now the infrastructure's there. We're setting up the infrastructure, and you're building it. You're the ones that are building it. You're the ones who are supporting it. So, and that's all we can ask for, because remember, the corporate Democrats have an institutional advantage because they get to go to corporations and billionaires, so they can meet 20 people in a smoke-filled back room and get all the infrastructure they need if a sufficient number of them are billionaires and really willing to contribute. We are not doing that. We refuse to do that as a matter of principle, because we understand that incentive structure and we understand human nature and we understand it's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. So if we're only taking money from accountants and construction workers and teachers and regular people and working people, well, then we're going to represent them. So, and obviously there's a pledge to take no corporate money, no billionaire money, and then you fight to actually get money out of the system. Now, the numbers are great. They really are, and it blows me away how much support this thing is getting. But again, I wanted to dive into a few things here. So how did this originate? How did this come about? Well, don't lie to me. I know after the election, many of you were feeling the same thing that I was feeling. This was a collective emotion around the country where you weren't only mad. We were mad, but you weren't just mad at the Republicans. You weren't just mad at Donald Trump. But you felt fire in your belly against the corporate Democrats. Because how many times did we warn them? We told them. They didn't listen. In fact, they laughed at us. We told them Hillary Clinton is the last Democrat in the country that should be running against Donald Trump. Why? Donald Trump is positioning himself. He's using the rhetoric of a populist right candidate. Now, there's plenty of xenophobia and bigotry sprinkled in there and atrocious policies, whether it be banning 1.6 billion Muslims from coming to the country or deporting 11 million undocumented immigrants or doing nationwide stop and frisk or torture, grotesque violation of international law and U.S. law, or taking out their families. So he's a monster in many respects. But then a lot of people on, a lot of the establishment Democrats missed it when half the time Trump would say, hey, how about we do no nation building? How about we do massive infrastructure spending? And that's what I mean when I say make America great again. How about I don't cut Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid? How about that? How about I block TPP? How about I say I'm for the workers? How about I rail against NAFTA? So when he said those things, everybody in the establishment Democratic circles would just smugly assume that Trump was so goofy and such a reality star buffoon that everybody could see through him and that there's no way he was going to win. But they failed to see the populist aspect of Trump, and they also failed to see the establishment status quo corrupt angle of Hillary Clinton. And it takes a lot to overlook that amount of corruption. Between her and Bill, they've raised over $3 billion in their careers. I wonder if they're going to do the bidding of their donors. Somebody gives you $3 billion. I wonder if you're going to take those phone calls and perhaps try to craft policy ever so slightly in their direction. No, you absolutely are. Again, this gets back to human nature. We're talking about a Democratic candidate who supported NAFTA. We're talking about a Democratic candidate who supported TPP and pushed for it 45 times and called it the gold standard. We're talking about a Democratic candidate who supported the war in Iraq, who supports intervention in Syria, who was a key orchestrator of intervention in Libya. We're talking about a Democratic candidate whose claim against Wall Street is, I went down there and told them to, quote, cut it out. This is comical. Like, I actually laughed when I heard her make that argument in a debate against Bernie Sanders. The flaws were endless. When Donald Trump said, make America great again, what was her response? America is already great. Are you running as a Republican? Because that's like some shit Ronald Reagan would say. America's already great. Is it great for the 50% of people in America who make $30,000 a year or less? Is it great for the people in Flint whose kids are now getting brain damage? Is it great because we're doing 7 different interventions? Is it great because hundreds of thousands of innocent people were killed in Iraq? Why is it great? How is it great? What does that mean? What does that mean? You're supposed to be the candidate of change. You're supposed to be the anti-establishment candidate. In my lifetime, virtually every Democratic candidate said, I am more anti-establishment than my opponent. No, not Hillary Clinton. She was above that. And how did that work out? So we warned them. We warned them from the beginning. So in that anger directly after the election, I was in contact with some of the top liberals and progressives around the country, and we had a bunch of conversations. Now, what I was originally going to do is I was just going to go out there on my show in the week after the election and do a big segment where I say, this is the direction the Democratic Party needs to go in, and I lay out all these ideas. I lay out what is basically today the Justice Democrats platform. Back then, it would have just been me yelling into the wind. And it would have been a good segment, and it probably would have got over 100,000 views, and, you know, maybe it would have sparked somebody somewhere to do something to get a little more involved, and, hey, it's a drop in the bucket, but we inched in the right direction. But no, when one of the people I was in contact with was Cenk from TYT, and I told him, look, man, I'm going to do this thing where I rail against the Democrats and tell them what they need to do to win. It is more or less what I would call or what I would classify as a left Tea Party. Now, not Tea Party in the sense that we're crazy and these are crazy ideas and aren't we obstinate and ridiculous, but Tea Party in the sense that it is an infiltration of the Democratic Party, like the Tea Party was an infiltration of the Republican Party, and we're going to try to force the proper policies that the American people support to rule the day in the Democratic Party. Now, he told me, wait, pump your brakes. Pump your brakes. You want to do that. He was thinking about something along those lines, too. Other top liberals and progressives in the country were thinking the same thing. What do we do? Where do we go from here? I just want to get it all off my chest and rant against this broken, corrupt, establishment, corporatist Democrat Party. And then he said, let's actually try to do this. So he knows Bernie Sanders, interviewed him a few times, and introduced him at a couple of his rallies back when he was obviously still running. And so therefore he knows and was introduced to top Bernie Sanders officials. So the amount of effort that goes in to building a presidential campaign and really setting up that infrastructure, because you got to remember, you have to go from this place to that place to that place to that place. You got to give a speech in that state and then that state and then that state and then that state. The amount of organization that it takes, the structure that's behind it, the sheer number of hours that people work to get everything right, it is mind-numbing. So you need masterful organizers to pull it off. Well, it was a match made in heaven. You have these organizers who are so superb at dotting the I's and crossing the T's and doing all the necessary, vital, important work that I'm not capable of doing and he's not capable of doing. Introduced, there were phone calls made, and then the groundwork was set up. And so now here we are. We had those conversations. We had those discussions behind the scenes. Like I told everybody multiple times already, people who say, well, you know, Democratic Party is the problem. You know, we should have done a third party. We looked into it. Believe me, there were many people who said, well, yeah, we should do that because, yeah, the Democratic Party is fundamentally the problem, and maybe it's beyond saving. Maybe that's what it is, and we got to face the gross reality of it. The more we researched, the more we found out, according to our calculations, being a third party handicaps you so much that it would be much harder for us to actually win that way. Now, again, that's not me saying it's the third party's fault. I love many of the third parties. But it's like taking a sledgehammer, swinging it at a kneecap, and then the person can only hop and saying, okay, now go run the marathon. We didn't want to swing a sledgehammer at one of our kneecaps. And I still consider those third parties with the ideology that coincides with our ideology, they're our allies. I got nothing against the Greens. I got nothing against the Dem Socialists. I love them. We calculated that we can be allies with these kinds of people and take over the Democratic Party in the process. Because, and this gets to another point here, the institutional issues. So, for example, when I originally registered to vote, I didn't want to register as a fucking Democrat. Why would I want to do that? Why would I want to do that? I wanted to be an independent. But it was explained to me that, hey, you got to understand something. In your state, New York, just like many states around the nation, if you do that, you will not be able to vote in Democratic primaries. They are closed primaries. So then I didn't have a choice. The Democratic primary is perhaps the most important vote you cast every election. So what am I going to do? Put myself on the sidelines and not vote in the most important election because I care that much about a title that I'd rather have independent by my name instead of Democrat? No, you're painted into a corner. Now, it may be gross that we're painted into a corner, and it is, but we're in a corner. So you got to accept the reality. So what do? You have to wage the revolution from within and without. So those people are my allies. And just as Democrats, we support plans that would make the third parties viable options. But facts are facts as they are right now. And even if you talk to those parties, they'll tell you, yeah, we haven't had the success we wish we had because of the institutional biases against us. Correct. So you got to wage the fight from within and without. We're going within, and we're going to take over the Democratic Party, and we're going to kick out the corporatists. Why would we concede the battle to them? Go ahead. You have one of the two major parties in the country, and let's have no actual liberal, progressive, populist representatives in any of the two major parties, and have all the good people who care about the right things and want to fight for the people outside. Why would we do that? that is conceding the fight to the worst factions in the country, the most corrupt factions in the country. So we decided to take over the Democratic Party, and obviously, I think people understand. I think they get the gist of this thing. Now, I want to go ahead, before we wrap up for today on Justice Democrats, and give everybody one more point here. Look, I'm in touch with the YouTube community and with people who are skeptical, and in some cases, people who are cynical. So let me be clear about something. I'm skeptical too. I have no idea if this is actually going to work. But I know one thing. We have to fucking try. Because if we don't, what then? If not now, when? So, on you and me. And it's not that we can't do it, and it's impossible to do it. It's just that it's really, 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 really hard. So the way I look at that, that's all the more reason for us to fight harder. We got to show them that there's still people power in this country. You have to keep reminding yourself, when you look at the opinion polls, people are with us. They are with us. They are with us. They agree with us on the policy issues. And when it comes to our most important thing, getting money out of the system, having clean elections, so that the politicians represent the people and not the corporations and the donors, that's one where even a majority of Republicans agrees with us. So we have the people on our side. Now, there are some people who say, you don't get it, Kyle. The Democratic Party is so broken and so corrupt that we shouldn't even try to take it back. I would tell those people, if that really is the case, that there is zero hope, how is it that Bernie Sanders is a sitting senator right now? Oh, it's too broken, it's too corrupt, you'll never get a progressive in there, you'll never get a real liberal in there, you'll never get a principled politician in there. You say never, but never already isn't the case. We have Bernie Sanders as a sitting senator. One of the 100 most powerful people in the country is Bernie Sanders. If it can happen in Vermont, it can happen in Nebraska. If it can happen in Nebraska, it can happen in Minnesota. If it can happen in Minnesota, it can happen in California and New York and Hawaii and Florida. It's not impossible. It's just really, really hard. Yes, there are massive institutional biases against us. There is still hope. We know there's hope because Bernie Sanders is a sitting senator. We have a progressive caucus. Now, I'm willing to meet people who are still skeptical halfway and say, you know what? Yeah, maybe a decent number of those people in the progressive caucus are only so-called progressives, and they're not great. At least 25%, probably more, of the progressive caucus actually are great. So it's not impossible. It's just hard, and we have to wage the fight. So we have to build this thing from the ground up. It's on you and me, nobody else. And that means you go to justicedemocrats.com, you sign up, you nominate somebody, you nominate yourself, and you do your $27 donation. Because, again, one of the biggest institutional biases against us is that corporations and millionaires prop up the corporate Democrats, the establishment Democrats, like there's no tomorrow. So they will almost always have more money. But in a weird way, Donald Trump on this point should give people a little bit of hope. Because he is a reality star buffoon. And just by having a dash of populism in his campaign, even though he raised less money than the juggernaut Hillary Clinton, he ended up winning. If a populist right candidate can take over not only the Republican Party, but the country. You don't think a populist left candidate can take over the House of Cards, that is the corporate Democrats? No, of course they can. So don't let your skepticism, which is healthy, and again, I'm a skeptic too. I don't know if it's going to work, but we have to try. Don't let your skepticism becomes cynicism, because at that point you're just standing in the fucking way. And you need to take that for a hike, take that for a walk, while the rest of us do the goddamn hard work that needs to be done to get to the point where we have policies for the people implemented. So this is a hostile takeover of the Democratic Party by the Bernie wing, and we're going to fight, and we're going to fight on, and we're going to fight on. And I don't care how fucking long it takes. I don't care how difficult it is. I don't care how many sleepless nights there are. This isn't about any one of us individually. It's about fighting for these ideas, fighting for these concepts, and reforming the Democratic Party to be what it was supposed to be all along. So come join us, JusticeDemocrats.com. The fight is just beginning, and we need you. We need you. You need to run. You need to sign up. You need to get involved. You need to do the organization, because nobody's coming to save us. We are the only ones who are going to save ourselves. So let's get after it. Okay. Next. The International Business Times has a story here about how Donald Trump is ignoring corruption and ethics rules. So they report, when ExxonMobil CEO Rex Tillerson signed on to work for Donald Trump's new administration, he set himself up to receive a quick cash infusion. Exxon committed to giving him a $180 million retirement package just as he moves to lead a State Department that oversees Exxon-related public policy. For years, ethics watchdogs have said such payouts could be a way for corporations to buy influence from incoming government officials. You don't say. But, watchdogs said, at least for federal officials, first 2 years in office, they were barred by a rule from participating in government business affecting their former employees, or excuse me, employers. That prohibition may no longer apply as President Trump stocks his administration with Tillerson and other moguls whose companies have business with the government. The 8-year-old rule appears to be going unenforced, even if it is still on the books. So this drives me crazy, because this is also the case for antitrust laws, for example. So you're supposed antitrust laws basically ensure competition, which means you have higher quality and lower prices. But oftentimes you have companies that get so big and so powerful that they effectively have a monopoly. And when that's the case, antitrust laws are supposed to kick in and you're supposed to break up those companies. It's the same thing with the big banks. That's why we should break up the big banks. There are too few big banks with too much power. They're too big to fail. Well, if you're saying they're too big to fail, you are admitting they need to be broken up. Because if they fail, that means you got to bail them out. We shouldn't have a situation where a bailout is a virtual guarantee. A bailout of these broken institutions, and you hose the American people in the process of doing it because you need their tax money to bail them out. So that's why you got to break up the big banks. There's also other industries where you got to break them up. You got to break up the different companies. So that's unenforced in many respects. So the laws are on the books, but people yawn at it. Well, now it's the same thing with this. You have these ethics and corruption rules where they're on the books, but everybody yawns at it. Why are you yawning at it? Are you really going to tell me having the CEO of ExxonMobil be Secretary of State isn't by definition a conflict of interest? The guy spent his whole life building up ExxonMobil. The guy spent his whole life making deals not only with other business people, but yes, with foreign governments. So you're going to have somebody who's deeply entrenched with world leaders for business reasons now control public policy? That's insanity. So for example, one of the things I agreed with the Obama administration on is in the wake of the Crimea issue with Russia, where Russia basically walked in and said, this is ours, and they jacked Crimea. They said, Washington responded by saying, okay, we're going to sanction you. So they sanctioned them. Now, that put Russia in its place a little bit. They backed up and said, oh, we just lost a multi-billion dollar deal, and that's going to affect our economy in a negative way. They had that deal with ExxonMobil. Now, that gave them, you know, a little smack and said, know your role, son. You better not take any more, you know, of that region. You better not go into any post-Soviet states. Not going to happen. There are going to be consequences. Now, I don't support the sanctions on Russia for the WikiLeaks situation and the so-called election rigging, because they didn't actually rig the election. Worst-case scenario is they leaked information to WikiLeaks, and WikiLeaks ran with it, and we should have known that information anyway. So I wouldn't sanction them over that. Over Crimea, I actually agree with the Obama administration and what they did, and it kind of worked, because they backed off of doing any more actions like that. So if Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, comes in and goes, that's nice, we disagree, roll back those sanctions, approve that deal for ExxonMobil. Remember, he's the former CEO of ExxonMobil. Approve that deal for ExxonMobil. But don't worry, I'm not doing this because of personal business connections. I'm doing this because it's the best public policy. Bullshit. I call bullshit on that. You're doing it because you're still in cahoots with the company that just gave you $180 million. You are clearly going to represent them more so than you're going to represent the American people. What's your salary from the American people in this new position as Secretary of State? Does it come close to $180 million? No, it doesn't. So it's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. Exxon gives you a pat on the back, gives you $180 million. You go out of ExxonMobil and you craft public policy to help them. What other authoritarian regimes are you going to give smooth hand jobs to in order to further boost the profits of your owner, ExxonMobil? And he has the nerve to say, Trump has the nerve to say, we're draining the swamp. You're not draining the swamp. You're building a bigger swamp. You're importing more mosquitoes to the goddamn swamp. You're pouring that swamp water in the center of the Oval Office. That's what you're doing. You want to talk about swamps. What a sick, sick joke this is. If Hillary Clinton did this, I think everybody would understand, oh, good googly moogly is that massively corrupt. Well, it's the same thing for Donald Trump. You're taking ExxonMobil CEO and making him Secretary of State, and now you have the bitch-ass Republicans are folding, even the ones who at the beginning seem like they may block him. But by the way, they might block him not even over principled reasons, of course. Block him for ridiculous reasons. But no, even the ridiculous reasons have now gone away. The Republicans are going to approve him, and then there might even be some Democrats who buckle. You wonder why we need Justice Democrats? This is why we need Justice Democrats. Because the corporate Democrats are a sick, sick joke. They're a shell of what used to be the Democratic Party. Did you know they've been writing fluff pieces on – is it fluff pieces or puff pieces? I don't know. Either one I think sounds good. They've been writing unnecessarily kind – let's go with that – pieces about Chuck Schumer, saying he's now a hero of the left because he's leading the resistance. You want to take a guess how many of Trump's appointments so far Chuck Schumer has voted for? So in other words, not even just, hey, we're against this person and we vote against him, but they got, you know, approved either way. No, no, no. How many did he vote for? I am voting with Donald Trump to approve this appointment. I hope you're sitting down, because the answer is all of them. Every single appointment of Donald Trump, Chuck Schumer voted for him. And there are articles being written today and this week that say, hero of the left, Chuck Schumer is. Hero of the left, that's what he is. He's a hero of the left. What left? Which left? Certainly not my left. Certainly not your left. Certainly not the left. What left? The left in the Washington bubble. The left in the establishment. The left of the corporatists. He's on the left-wing fringe of the corporate Democrats, which means he's still massively right-wing, and he's a little punk bitch who's going to fold. And that's what he did, and that's what he's doing. Now, I'm not unreasonable. I said the other day, I'll keep saying it. You know, if there are some picks who are going to be more reasonable than others, and the Democrats didn't win the election, so it is what it is. You live to fight another day on some picks. General Mattis is one of them. He reportedly talked Trump out of torture. So, okay, he's more reasonable than the other ones. By the way, Trump immediately went back on that. But he's more reasonable than the other ones. You know, perhaps Nikki Haley for UN ambassador. Nikki Haley, I disagree with her politically across the board. But is she Jeff Sessions? No, I don't think she's Jeff Sessions. So, whatever. We'll give you Nikki Haley. We'll give you Mattis. But outside of that, I will obstruct tooth and nail and not give an inch on Jeff Sessions, Mr. Good People Don't Smoke Marijuana, and now he's going to have the ability to wage lawsuits against states that have legal marijuana. I would block Jeff Sessions by any means necessary. I would invent a hearing filibuster to block him. You have to drag me out of there in handcuffs to stop talking against Jeff Sessions. Mike Pompeo, who has already been approved, so Chuck Schumer, hero of the left, my ass, voted for him. Mike Pompeo said Edward Snowden should be executed. He called people who did torture patriots. He's in favor of even more NSA spying and sharing that spying and all that metadata between all the different government agencies, and he's now the head of the CIA. The head of the CIA, who's known for doing covert assassinations, wants Edward Snowden dead. And the Democrats, some Democrats voted for him. Ah! Poosder, I'd never give you Poosder for labor secretary. Remember, he doesn't believe in labor, and he's labor secretary. He's an Ayn Rand devotee, and he's labor secretary. He says, jobs, we need jobs, let's do automation. Let's go full-scale automation. You're going to be labor secretary, and you literally don't believe in labor or jobs. You want to go full automation. He doesn't believe in a minimum wage. He doesn't believe in unions. There were lawsuits over him with his fast food companies not giving breaks to people when they work. Labor secretary. DeVos. You think I'm going to give you fucking DeVos? Are you kidding me? She is a Christian fundamentalist who doesn't believe in public education, who's been picked to head public education. There's no way I'm giving... So, bottom line is, you have corporate Democrats who are going to fold to Donald Trump's picks. You have Donald Trump's picks who have hoisted the pirate flag. They're barely pretending anymore to not be corrupt. You picked ExxonMobil CEO for Secretary of State when Trump said repeatedly on the campaign trail, one of his most consistent talking points, we're going to take the oil. We're going to take the oil. That's what we're going to do. We're going to take the oil. To the victor go the spoils in war. We're going to take the oil. We're going to take the oil. Excuse you? You're openly advocating violating international law, U.S. law, going into a sovereign nation and jacking their natural resources. America used to have the 3% moral recognition and awareness to say, as we do that, we're not going to admit we're doing that, because that would be stupid. Trump's like, no, we're just going to admit it. We're going to take the oil, and hey, look at that, I picked ExxonMobil CEO for Secretary of State. Look, you're inviting terrorism against the United States when you go and take Iraq's oil. What the fuck do you expect? What do you think is going to happen? You go jack natural resources from all these different countries, and then you're surprised when people hate you? Did you know there was a poll recently? This was done by U.S. polling agencies. Gallup did one of these polls. They asked people all around the world, who's the biggest threat to peace? The answer was, by far and away, the United States. We're the biggest threat to peace. Now, people hear that, they go, oh, I can't believe it. We love freedom and democracy, and we're fighting because we're the world police, and we care about altruism and human rights, and really, so why are we buddy-buddy with Saudi Arabia, who's one of the biggest violators of human rights? They're ISIS that made it. They're Al-Qaeda that made it. They have the same ideology, Wahhabi Islam, ultra-conservative fundamentalist Islam. They cover women up. They call all atheist terrorists. They behead people in the public square for sorcery. So we care about human rights. That's why they're our top ally. We care about human rights. That's why we gave Israel $38 billion to continue building settlements and do occupation and apartheid and oppression of the Palestinians. We care about human rights, which is why we're backing a bombing campaign in Yemen, which is slaughtering women and children. That country's on the brink of famine, and we're fueling a bombing campaign against it. That's how much we care about human rights. We care so much about human rights that they negotiated allowing Malaysia in the TPP, which tolerates slavery. They tolerate slavery in Malaysia. That's how much we care about human rights, so we'll make a deal with you if your country is doing slavery. So it's nonsense, man. It is complete and utter nonsense. And we are not going to have these picks stand. This is why you need to support Justice Democrats. This is why you need to back Justice Democrats. We got to reform the Democratic Party, and we got to reform the country. And we got to have a backbone to stand up to Donald Trump's corruption and his backwards policies. And we need to stand up to the corporate Democrats to stop them from buckling and stop them from being corrupt. We're waging a battle on two fronts here, and it's ugly. Okay, let me take a quick break. When we come back, good news about a backlash to Donald Trump's extremist appointments. Actually, you know what? I'm not even going to do a break. I don't have. I'm going too slow here. So let's keep going. That was badass, wasn't it? I don't need no damn break. Let me just take a sip of my drink and keep going. We have some good news here about a backlash to Donald Trump's extremist appointments. The Hill reports for us. There have been 8,000 calls to members of the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee on Education Secretary pick Betsy DeVos. Senator Bob Casey has received more than 50,000 emails and letters opposing DeVos, according to his spokesman. And Senator Tim Kaine, his spokeswoman, said Kaine has received more than 25,000 emails and letters about DeVos alone, and the vast majority have been in opposition to her nomination. So this is a good thing. What you're seeing here is the people are drawing a line. The people are saying hell no, and they're prodding Republicans and Democrats to say, don't you dare even think about it. Don't you dare consider voting for her. I want you to block her at any cost. And the people are 100% right. And this is why we need Justice Democrats in there who will actually listen to the people, and they agree with the people. Wow, they agree with the people as opposed to buckling to Republicans or listening to corporate donors. You have to remember how extreme Donald Trump's picks have been. Betsy DeVos is a Christian fundamentalist who doesn't believe in public education, who wants to be in control and to lead public education. She will decimate the education system in a way that we've never seen. She's not playing around. She's a true ideologue, and she donated about $200 million to Republicans in her life. She's a billionaire, her and her family. And they've donated about $10 million to Donald Trump's campaign. I wonder why Donald Trump picked her. Because he's corrupt. He is the swamp, as he talks about draining the swamp. So you have somebody who's deeply corrupt, who was put there because of corruption, you have somebody who doesn't believe in public education, and you have somebody, let's face it, who doesn't believe in education, never mind public education. Because if you're a Christian fundamentalist, you want to miseducate people. You want to send them in the wrong direction. You don't want to teach them facts. You want to teach them fairy tales. So I say hell no to Betsy DeVos. The American people say hell no, and now they're getting flooded. Your people in Washington, your senators, are getting flooded with these calls, and that's a good thing. So the sad reality of the situation is the Democrats have buckled so often, who knows if they have any fight in them. I mean, we just discussed it. Chuck Schumer, who's having articles written about him as being some sort of hero of the left now, he voted in favor of all of Donald Trump's appointments so far, including Mike Pompeo, who called torturers patriots, and who said he wants Edward Snowden executed. This guy's going to lead the CIA. Chuck Schumer, left hero, voted for him. What a sick, sick, sick joke. Here's what we need to do. People need to continue to call their representatives, their senators. You need to let them know. You're going to draw some lines here. You're not going to get Rex Tillerson, for example, for Secretary of State. He's the CEO of ExxonMobil. He just got $180 billion from ExxonMobil. Billion? Did I say billion? $180 million from ExxonMobil. But still think about that. $180 million. That's what ExxonMobil gave him. I wonder if he's going to craft policy in favor of ExxonMobil. What a tough one. And I wonder if that would move us away from what the public good is. Of course it would. To boost ExxonMobil's profits, you're going to make deals with unsavory regimes now, aren't you? You're going to roll back the sanctions that made sense against Russia over Crimea. Obama said, oh, you're going to just jack Crimea? That's nice. No more oil deal for you. So, and that deal was with ExxonMobil. So they lost billions of dollars over that, and then Russia slammed on the brakes and said, whoa, okay, no, we're not going into Estonia. We're not taking any other places here. We're not going into the post-Soviet states, so relax. they might roll that in the other direction, which is a bad idea. They might, you know, further entrench our relationship with Saudi Arabia, which is a horrible idea. They're one of the biggest human rights violators on the planet. So they are the swamp. No, I'm not going to give you Rex Tillerson. I wouldn't have given you Pompeo, even though he's already approved. I'm not going to give you DeVos. I'm not going to give you Poosder, the labor secretary who doesn't believe in labor, wants to do automation and forget about the jobs, is against unions, is against the living wage, is an Ayn Rand devotee. There's no way I would approve these people. So it's good that the people are standing up and calling Democrats and Republicans and saying, no more, no way. But this is why we need Justice Democrats to actually be in there representing you, because you wouldn't even need to call the Justice Democrat. The Justice Democrat knows there's no way in hell we're going to let this happen. We're going to stand up and fight, even if we have to invent new ways to fight. I said it before, I'll say it again. They're contemplating rolling back the filibuster in many respects. I would make up a new filibuster if they did that. I would do a hearing filibuster. Oh, we don't have the numbers to block this person. Okay, step aside. When it's my turn to ask questions in these hearings to approve these different appointments, I wouldn't yield until they drag me out of there in handcuffs. And guess what? In the process of that, people all of a sudden, ooh, what's happening here? This is interesting. What's going on? Oh, my God, that guy's getting dragged down handcuffed. Oh, my God, he's a politician. He's getting dragged down handcuffs. What's going on? What's going on? Oh, look at what he's talking about. Oh, he's saying very clearly, this person is unfit for the job. This person is a corrupt monster. This person is only here because they donated to the Republican Party and they donated to Donald Trump. This person is a Christian fundamentalist and wants to lead our education system. There's no way we're going to let this happen. The United States is going to fall behind even more when it comes to education around the world. You go on and on, and you let everybody know, and you raise consciousness, you raise awareness, and you paint the Republicans in a corner where they feel like if we vote for this person, we're ruining our chances in the next election. This is how you fight. This is how you win. The Democrats need to do that, and it's great that the American people are putting pressure on them to do that, and they need to continue it. Okay, next. President Trump was asked if he supports getting rid of the filibuster for Supreme Court nominees. And he said yes, of course, because he's picking the Supreme Court nominees. So he was talking about, it was a separate conversation about Jeff Sessions for Attorney General, and he said this. We have obstructionists. That's not fair to a man. Other people are delayed. Look at Mike Pompeo for CIA. That is a great choice. Everybody agrees. Okay, wrong. Not true. So, when you say we have obstructionists, that's not fair to a man. Why didn't you say that under Obama? Because the Republicans broke a record, broke the filibuster record under Obama. You had nothing to say then because you supported it. So you can't. That's not an argument you can use. You could try to use a different argument, but you can't say, oh, I'm clutching my pearls over filibusters because obstruction isn't okay. Well, if obstruction's not okay, then obstruction is not okay. That means that applies with Republicans and Democrats. But no, you supported it when it was against the Democrat. When it's against you, oh, no. Now I'm against it. So use a standard and stick to it. That's not an argument that's acceptable. Now, furthermore, he's had many of his appointments approved, way more than I would have approved. I would have maybe given him Nikki Haley, and I would have given him Mattis. Everybody else I'm obstructing tooth and nail. You're not going to get Pompeo, who I think actually is approved now. You're not going to get Poozer. You're not going to get Rex Tillerson. You're not going to get Jeff Sessions. You're definitely not going to get Deputy Secretary of State. So that would be neoconservative John Bolton. You're not going to get him. So I would obstruct even more. I would obstruct a lot more. And for them to whine now, like this is the – Mitch McConnell's doing this too. He's blocking and this is not what the people want. Where were you giving a fuck about what the people wanted when it was Obama's picks? Merrick Garland for Supreme Court, there were so many people who – wanted that. It was the overwhelming majority of the country. They didn't even have a hearing on it, never mind a vote on it. So now all of a sudden, oh, this is not what the American people want. Well, actually, look, if you go person by person and you go poll by poll, my guess is people know what Betsy DeVos is about. They're not going to want her. So this is yet again Republican hypocrisy. Now all of a sudden they're against obstruction when they were for it on a level I'd never seen before. So here's my point to them. Come up with a better argument. Argue in favor of your appointments based on their merit, which you can't do because they have none. Okay. Next. McClatchy is reporting on how Trump is affecting veterans in a negative way with some of his executive orders. So they say the following: President Donald Trump's temporary hiring freeze on federal jobs is disproportionately affecting a group of his most loyal supporters, veterans, who receive preference in federal hiring. Some already have had job interviews canceled or postponed. The hiring freeze also applies to the Department of Veterans Affairs, something that deeply troubles veterans groups and lawmakers who say the freeze complicates the provision of veteran services by an agency that is chronically understaffed. Okay, so let's understand how insane this is. Donald Trump does what is nothing but a showman's move. I mean, this is just a tap dance. This is kabuki theater. This is paying a lip service to a far-right ideology, which makes no goddamn sense to begin with. When he steps up and he says, we're doing a hiring freeze in the federal government. That's what we're doing, a hiring freeze. There's going to be no more. He's portraying it as if Obama was going nuts and hiring federal people left and right. There was actually a net cut of public jobs under Obama. Massive gain in the private sector, but a couple hundred thousand jobs were cut in the public sector under Obama. So now that's something Republicans should love. But since he's Obama, they're never going to give him credit, even when he does their policies. So Trump comes in, acts like there's this epidemic and the government, that there are too many government jobs. Hiring freeze. We're not hiring anybody else at the government. That's what we're doing. And the people at the VA are like, whoa. We are chronically understaffed. We need to hire many more people. And like they explain here, job interviews canceled or postponed. They're like, what's going on here? Meanwhile, you know, Trump's out there talking about the veterans are so tremendous, believe me. Anyway, let's understaff our VA hospitals, make it a worse situation for everybody there, and make it a worse situation for the veterans who would be hired because they get preference when it comes to hiring them. So you're hurting the veterans, and you're hurting the veterans very clearly. And this is what an ideologue does, people. That's the point here. This is when your philosophy in theory overrides the practical empirical reality of its effects. So you don't care about the practical and empirical reality. It doesn't matter to you. You're going to live in your pie-in-the-sky, ideological, philosophical world and not care about the real-world consequences. And this also reminds me of his idea, which he repeated multiple times on the campaign trail. We're going to ban all new regulations, and we're going to cut for every new one that's added. At some point, we're going to cut two. Why come up with arbitrary limits and numbers on regulations? So, and he said he wants to do a freeze on regulations. Well, then what happens when there's a new chemical that we find that's poisoning the water supply in Kansas, let's say, and you need some new regulations to stop it because it's caused by some industrial runoff into the reservoir? But we just banned all new regulations, so we're not going to do it because we banned all new regulations. But why is your theoretical idea, your philosophical idea, your ideological idea overriding the reality in the world? That's crazy. That's backwards. That's silly. That's ridiculous. That is fundamentally unscientific. But then again, I'm saying that as if we should be surprised that Trump is being unscientific when this is a guy who repeatedly claimed that vaccines cause autism, and experts around the country rolled their eyes and said that's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard in my life. He doesn't believe in climate science either. Calls it a Chinese hoax that climate change is happening. So this is dangerous. It's dangerous because he said he wants to eliminate the EPA and the FDA.
The food police. That's the problem.
So that would make it so that we have many more instances of, disease, viruses, in the food supply, if you're going to, you know, kneecap the ability to do regulation to keep our food safe, I got news for you. It's not going to be an anarcho-capitalist utopia where for magically somehow the food is more safe when you take away the regulators who look for safety. Yeah. No, it'll be worse. It'll be worse, and then it's harder to contain when there is an outbreak because you've got that agency too. So it's extremism. There's no other way to put it. It's extremism. This is an extremist who's taken over the White House. He's letting ideology override reality. You're doing a hiring freeze when some government agencies need to hire more people, and you want to do a regulation freeze, which would be an unmitigated disaster. So this is a horrific situation, and this is why you need justice Democrats, not corporatist Democrats, who are going to fight this every step of the way and make sure they try to get the policies the American people want in place. Okay, next. So Donald Trump has been doing something that's just pathetic for a president to be doing. It's pathetic for anybody to be doing, but it's extra pathetic for a president to be doing. In the past few days, he tweeted some eyebrow-raising things. Now, he usually does that, but this time it was a little bit different. So he called Chelsea Manning an ungrateful traitor. Those are the exact words he used. Quote, ungrateful traitor. And he also tweeted that maybe we send the feds into Chicago. So maybe we impose martial law in Chicago. Now, those ideas are odious enough on their own and incorrect enough on their own. But come to find out, people did some research. They looked into it. Come to find out, he called Chelsea Manning an ungrateful traitor 30 minutes to an hour after Fox News ran with that banner on the bottom of their screen talking about Chelsea Manning, because Chelsea Manning wrote an article where she says, hey, look, Obama was a weak president because he didn't stand up to Republicans, he didn't really fight for progressive values like single payer, for example. So Chelsea Manning's right on the substance of that, but we don't need to get into that. That's a different conversation for a different day. In fact, we had that conversation on the show yesterday. But putting that aside, he copied exactly what was on the banner on Fox News. Furthermore, you say, well, that's a coincidence. That's, I mean, a lot of people on the right think she's an ungrateful traitor either way, so maybe that's a coincidence. Well, when he was tweeting about how maybe he sends the feds into Chicago, at that time, Bill O'Reilly on his show was having a conversation where he said, maybe Trump should send the feds into Chicago. The guy is making policy based off of what Fox News says. Somebody pointed this out, and it's true. It's not just, you know, the top hosts at Fox News who are shaping the policy, which they are. I mean, Hannity and O'Reilly, to a certain extent, are leading the country right now. But it's actually worse than that. Mid-level staffers who do the banners at Fox News, like ungrateful traitor for Chelsea Manning, they're also having a direct effect on the President of the United States. An out-and-out propaganda network for the Republican Party that believes in every far-right, backwards idea you can think of. These are the people who have a direct line to the President. We have a Fox News president in there. You know, I'm amazed, just looking at this story alone, I'm amazed that Trump was able to keep it together enough during the campaign season and during the general election to do even the fake populism, to do even the, yeah, no, totally, I am for unions. I am going to rebuild infrastructure. Yeah, I'm against nation building overseas. Because guess what? The people on Fox News are openly against unions. The people on Fox News are for nation building. The people on Fox News, every toxic right-wing position, oh, they believe in it wholeheartedly. So, apparently he was able to keep his mind off the TV, or keep his eyes off the TV, I should say, enough to not learn that Fox News is for TPP. So he did one good thing, TPP. Oh, thank goodness. But hold your breath, because the next time Fox News starts promoting a trade deal, which they will, Trump will probably, oh, yeah, tremendous, believe me. This is the Trump trade deal. It's the best deal ever. Unbelievable. Let me just tell you. So this is bad. We have a president who watches Fox News, and that shapes his worldview. I mean, it'd be bad enough if we had a president that watched MSNBC and had that shape their worldview, because MSNBC is the Democratic propaganda network. They're not liberal. They're not progressive. They are Democratic Party apologists, come hell or high water. It'd be bad enough if you're watching MSNBC, bad enough if you're watching CNN, but Fox News is the worst of the worst. What's next? One America News Network? Is that here? The Blaze? Is that what you're going to do? The furthest right factions in the country? So look out, man. It's going to be a wild 4 years. Okay, next. Richard Spencer of the so-called alt-right spoke to David Pakman of the David Pakman Show, and Spencer had another revealing moment that I want to share with you. Now, the previous revealing moment was when he was at a conference in Washington, and he, in the middle of his speech, he spoke about the Lügenpresse. Lügenpresse means lying press, and it, of course, that phrase, that term originates in Nazi Germany. Now, if that wasn't clear enough, he also said at the end of his speech, hail our people, hail victory, hail Trump. Hail victory translates to Sieg Heil. Does that sound familiar? Does hail Trump sound familiar? It's not like anybody in the past said, I don't know, maybe hail Hitler? Maybe, just a little bit. There were people in the audience at this event going, doing the Nazi salute. So we say so-called alt-right because it is so-called alt-right. The guy's a fucking Nazi. I mean, what do you want me to tell you? It is what it is. So that was a revealing moment. Now we have another revealing moment. David Pakman pounced on the new information, let's say, about Richard Spencer, because for a while he kept it under wraps and he hid behind the banner of, oh, no, I'm just a white nationalist. You know, I'm kind of like Pat Buchanan. I'm like a populist who believes in nationalism, but I'm also like racist, but I'm not that bad. I'm not like a neo-Nazi, you know what I'm saying? So Pakman said, okay, well, let's figure this out, and look at what happened.
Richard, we are out of time, but real quick.
You're welcome.
I heard that will you denounce Adolf Hitler? I heard you don't denounce Adolf Hitler when asked about that.
Adolf, the National Socialism was a disaster. The 20th century was pretty much a disaster from.
Yeah, but do you denounce the actions of Adolf Hitler?
I'm not gonna play this game.
Oh,
where
it's not a game.
You throw out historical figures and I denounce them. I mean, do you denounce Stalin? Do you denounce Pol Pot? I mean, look.
Yeah.
The National Socialism is part of history. It's not who I am.
No, I'm not asking if Hitler is part of history, but so you don't denounce Hitler when asked, is what you're saying.
I don't play this game of denunciation.
Well, but calling it a game is a game. That's
that
a game, to call it a game.
Playing
a game.
What?
To call it a game is playing a game. Do you condemn the KKK?
The KKK? I mean...
Yeah, you've heard of that, right?
Just, again,
or you like Trump, you've not heard of that.
Richard.
Or should I say Dick?
Dick.
Okay, how stupid are you? Like, even if, I can't believe I'm giving advice to a fucking Nazi. Even if you are secretly pro-Hitler, it gotta be a secret, dude. Like, you can't, you lost that PR battle long, long ago. So, if somebody asks you, do you condemn Hitler? Here's your answer. Yes. That's it. Of course I do. Are you crazy? Yes. Do you condemn the KKK? Yeah.
even if you support them, you say that. But he's like, KKK. Oh, the KKK. I'm saying we're the KKK. I mean, who are even the KKK? I don't know, it should be KKK. Is that, I don't know. You're talking about like Kenan and Kel and Ken? There was a third one? If it came, I mean, I like Nickelodeon. I like Kenan and Kel. I don't know what you mean, KKK. KKK, I never heard of the KKK. Like, what is wrong with you? Do you condemn Adolf Hitler? Look, games. Yeah, I don't play this game. What fucking game? You have a reputation as being a fucking neo-Nazi now. You know that's your goddamn reputation. So it is the most logical, straightforward question anybody has ever asked in human history. Do you condemn Adolf Hitler? You know, look, it's complicated. It's not fucking complicated. It's just games. You're playing games where you're asking me things that make perfect sense, given the context of everything I've stood for. So I don't play this game. What a fucking game. I like how David Packham was like, actually, you saying it's a game is you playing a game. Like, you're playing a game. I'm not playing a game. I have an obvious question. What are you talking about? And then my favorite part is, yo, come on, man. Are you playing this game? I mean, do you condemn Pol Pot and Stalin? He's like, yeah. Absolutely. Not even close. I obviously condemn him. Well, okay. Well, Well, whatever. I don't play this game. It's not a fucking game. Okay. Dude, here's... Let me do a nice little run-through for everybody real quick. Here's how you answer that question if you condemn Hitler. Yes, I condemn him. Next question. Do you condemn the KKK? Yes, I condemn him. Next question. I mean, this guy isn't even with it enough, and it's hilarious that some people think he's an intellectual. This guy isn't even with it enough to even, like, do the lie real quick. To understand that, hey, man, you have these broader goals, and, like, you're going to have to disconnect yourself from Hitler and the KKK if you really want to achieve them in any real way. So, but anyway, I think you guys get the point here. He's a fucking loathsome human being. And, yes, it is fair to call him a Nazi. It is fair to call him a neo-Nazi. He won't even condemn Hitler. He pretends like it's a game against you, or, oh, it's a plot. There's no fucking plot. Do you support him or not? It's reasonable to ask that question, given you saying Lugan Pressa and hail Trump and hail our people and hail victory and your white nationalist alt-right ideology and the fact that you've said openly that, oh, yeah, no, the propaganda against the Jews, I've had people look into it to make fun of us, and then they started believing it, and now they hate Jews too. What? Oh, why are you asking me if I agree with Hitler? I don't know what you're talking about. All I said was I hate the Jews. What do you mean? So, what a... God, he's so stupid. I can't believe anybody takes him seriously. Again, he masked it for a while. He's like, oh, no. See, we are just a nationalist movement, and we we're not against other people. We're for our people, white people. Look, Josh Turner, who is a former neo-Nazi, who we've had on this show, he's reformed, and he's reformed through science and atheism and reason. One of the first things he told me was, yeah, that's the fucking trick that neo-Nazis use to try to recruit more people, is they frame it as, no, we're not against anybody, we're just for white people, and we just think we're better, so by definition, you would be less than, and we are against you, because we're more for us. So he explained it all, and it's all laid out there, so I don't know who the fuck you think you're kidding, Richard Spencer, but you're a silly person. And I don't even want to go into it, obviously we're touching on it a little bit here, but Nazism is basically a fundamentalist religion with a bunch of ideas that are just completely and utterly factually wrong. I mean, a lot of it stems from German mysticism and these misconceptions about the Aryan race and a time when the Aryans ruled the world, which doesn't exist. It is fake. It is like the, you know, hey, Jesus is three people, but he's one person. Hey, you know, Muhammad was a prophet. Hey, it's religion. It's not based on anything real. Again, I don't know why I'm bothering to argue so fervently on something where virtually every single person agrees with me. The overwhelming majority is like, yeah, Nazism, wrong, got it, next. But I guess it just bugs me that, like, people still believe in it. And to me, the biggest argument has always been, you have people claiming superiority. So you have this group of people that says we are superior to other people in every sense of that word. And then they act in what is the most inferior way imaginable. So when you do violence, when you murder people, when you expel people from their own land, when you commit crimes nonstop, how can you do that and then claim, but I'm superior? No, but those actions in and of themselves are inferior. So it's like somebody, it's like fucking Charles Manson or what's his face, other famous serial killers, Gacy or whatever his name is. It's like as they're doing these mass murders and they're, you know, doing horrific acts, they're like, but I'm superior. No, you're not superior. If anything, you are actually inferior in your extremist ideology, in this case Nazi ideology, because you're acting on beliefs that are incorrect and doing the most inhumane and unethical and immoral and wrong actions. So as you act in an outwardly inferior way, you claim to be superior. And remember, they try to use similar arguments against minority groups. Like they'll say, black people commit more crimes, therefore they're inferior. You agree with Hitler, who is the worst criminal in history, arguably. So, oh yeah, no, the fact that you commit crimes means you're inferior, but I want to be the biggest criminal ever. Wait, how does this work again? I don't know, I'm just better than you. No, you're not, you're an idiot, you're a clown, virtually everybody can see through you, and you wouldn't even denounce Hitler and the KKK, so I do believe you undermine your own ideology in about a minute-long clip. Well done, Richard. Or again, should I say Dick? Okay, next. White House Chief Strategist Steve Bannon did a phone interview with The Times, and he said something that is a little concerning. So he said, the media should be embarrassed and humiliated and keep its mouth shut and just listen for a while. I want you to quote this. The media here is the opposition party. They don't understand this country. Okay. Now, I would argue an administration that picks Rex Tillerson for Secretary of State, the CEO of ExxonMobil, who just got $180 million from ExxonMobil, maybe you don't understand the American people. Maybe you don't understand the American people because Trump just put in or wants to put in Betsy DeVos for education secretary when she doesn't believe in public education and she's a Christian fundamentalist. The majority of the American people don't agree with that. Maybe you don't understand the American people when Attorney General Jeff Sessions, that's who Trump wants for Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, when he says good people don't smoke marijuana, but 58% of the American people want to legalize marijuana. Maybe you don't understand the American people. So with this smug attitude, and by the way, let's face the facts here, even with Hillary Clinton being as terrible a candidate as she is and as big of a corporatist and a sellout, she still beat Donald Trump in the popular vote by nearly 3 million votes. So again, you're claiming this mandate. You're claiming, oh, my, everybody agrees with Trump. He's the least popular president ever to enter office. I'm not kidding. They did a poll this week. Now his approval rating is 36%, the lowest of a president at this point ever. And you're going to sit there and tell me maybe you don't understand the country. No, I'm pretty sure you don't understand the country. Now, furthermore, dude, you're the White House chief strategist. You are in the government now. You are the government now. So when you say something like the media should keep its mouth shut, that is a crystal clear sign. Hey, that First Amendment thing, not on our watch. We don't really believe in it, and I'm going to dictate to you what you can and cannot say and what you should and should not do. Now, he didn't take official action and say, oh, here's a law, or we're literally going to force you. But this is a bad sign, and people in the government, under no circumstances, should tell people in the media to shut up. And that's exactly what he's doing. Oh, shut up. Just shut up and listen for a while. No, their fucking job is to call out your bullshit, Steve. And perhaps you're just flatly unaware that you are full of shit, because you are full of shit. So, the final thing on this is, when he says the media here is the opposition party, that's the one party he's right about. And that's when I say, good. Because, Steve, that's the point of the media. Now, you used to know that. When you were over at Breitbart and you were going after Obama nonstop, I mean, that's what you were doing. You were being the opposition party, and that's good. You're supposed to hold them accountable. You're supposed to hold them in check. You're supposed to make sure they do what they said they were going to do on the campaign trail. Now, it just so happens to be the case that Breitbart would attack Obama in the most hacky, ridiculous ways imaginable, unsurprisingly, ways that were false, unsurprisingly. But the core thing here is, should the media be in opposition to the government? Should they be adversarial to the claims of the government? And the answer is, hell yes, bitch. That's the point. I'm not going to sit here and do patty cakes with Donald Trump and his ridiculous, actions as president. I'm going to call it out whenever he's wrong. If he does something good, I'll give him credit. Hey, you killed TPP. Great! Great! Here's all the credit in the world for that. But when you start doing things that are unpopular, which is going to be most of the shit you've done and will do, I'm going to call it out. And that's my goddamn job. And if Steve Bannon doesn't like that, he can fucking blow me. Okay, next. Oh, by the way, everybody, just real quick, program note. I don't know if there's going to be a show on Monday. I haven't figured out yet, but my birthday is on Tuesday. January 31st is my birthday. I am not taking my birthday off because Tuesday is a really, really weird day to take off, perhaps the single weirdest day to take off. Like, I think Wednesday off makes more sense, Thursday off makes more sense, Friday off makes more sense. Tuesday's just the weirdest day ever to take off. So I will do a show on my birthday. Monday I might not, though. I'm not sure. And I also have a bunch of backed-up interviews that I have to do for Justice Democrats that I want to kind of do. And I might take Monday for that. Again, I don't know about all this yet, but I just wanted to share it with you because that might be what's going on for next week. Okay, now let's go to Hillary Clinton. Oh, God, she's back. She's back. So there were reports that Hillary Clinton was considering running for mayor of New York. It's yet to be seen if that's true, but now we have a new report here that's perhaps even more cringeworthy. So Mediaite is reporting that author Edward Klein is citing a source close to Hillary that says she wants to do a TV show to stay relevant and then run again. Now, look, Ed Klein is not reliable. I'm just going to put it out there like that because it's true. He's not reliable. So this could be completely fabricated. This could be misleading. This could be any of a number of things. Or it could be true. So there's a reason why I'm doing this segment either way, and I'll get to it. But here's what they say. Quote, she's utterly determined not to fade into the background. She intends to stay in the limelight and keep fighting the good fight. The show would come from a progressive point of view and would ideally feature chats with world leaders and progressive thinkers. All right, I'm sure she's going to invite me on there, right, Hill? She thinks being the host of a popular TV show would energize the Democratic Party base and her tens of millions of fans. It's a way to make a comeback and position herself for another run at the White House starting in a year or so. Okay. By the way, there's actually been polling on this. 62% of Democrats and independents don't want her to run again. Let me repeat that because that's devastating. 62% of Democrats and independents don't want her to run again. Your time's passed, Hillary. It's done. It's over. It's not even close. If you run again, you're going to do way, way, way worse than you did last time. There's no chance. You're done. You're done. You're done. You're done. You're done. You're done. 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 So you need to come to terms with that. You need to realize that. Now, furthermore, that would be the single worst TV show in human history. You're not going to do a progressive show. Everybody knows you're not progressive. Even your supporters, even many of your supporters are like, yeah, she's like, you know, center-left. And that's kind, because I don't think she's even center-left. But even her supporters acknowledge, like, yeah, no, I wouldn't say she's progressive. Your record speaks for itself. Supporting NAFTA, supporting TPP, voting for the Patriot Act, voting for the Iraq War, in favor of intervention in Syria, orchestrating in Libya, you're simply not progressive. You're simply not a liberal. So, and never mind the corrupt connections, which is perhaps even the bigger problem, because it's an indication of how you'll act in the future, and it's an indication that you're not really principled. You're willing to sell out your ideology and your vote to the highest bidder. So you're not – people see through it now. It's done, Hill. They see through it. They see through you. You're not going to host a progressive talk show. It's not going to be popular. It would be horrifically rated. It would be mocked universally. I could see protesters even getting their way into your live studio audience if you were to have a studio audience. It would be an epic disaster, the likes of which I don't think we've ever seen. So put it behind you. But that gets to the main point here, which is why I'm even doing this segment, which is you can't – you're hurting the Democrats. You're hurting the Democrats. Chuck Schumer's hurting the Democrats. Cory Booker's hurting the Democrats. You don't get it. You just don't get it. It's a new day. It's not the same anymore. It's just not the same. So you can't take corporate money. You can't take billionaire money. You can't be loosely connected to the things that are the defining and core features of the left. You have to get people energized. You have to get people out there to really fight for something. And you don't fight for anything real. I mean, half of your primary campaign was based on telling Bernie Sanders that he's got Bernie bro supporting him and they're sexist. When you have to revert to and resort to hack attacks like that is because you're utterly substanceless. When your claim to fame against Wall Street is that you argue, you went down there and shook your finger and said, cut it out. But see, that's a laugh line. That's like a comedic punchline. That's not a serious thing a serious person who actually cares about regulating Wall Street says. A serious person doesn't take $3 billion from special interests. So point is, even if you're considering it 1%, Hillary, stop. Don't. It's over. Go to the private sector and get paid. You sold out your entire career. You might as well go collect on that right now. But stay out of public policy. Stay out of the public eye. You really don't get the view many people have of you. You knew the rules. You knew the Electoral College system is the system. You knew it wasn't popular vote. And you didn't step foot in Wisconsin. You didn't step foot in many of the states in what was supposedly the Democratic firewall that you should have went to because you're arrogant. Because you're arrogant and you didn't understand just how much people view you as the establishment. They view you as the status quo, and it ain't fucking working for them, Hill. Many former Obama voters voted for Trump. Think about that. And now the person who couldn't defeat the most unpopular presidential candidate in history, because he had a 63% unfavorable rating at one point in the general election. You couldn't beat that guy, and now you want to revive it, and you want to revive it through a TV show. It would be just funny if I wasn't also really angry at even the thought of it. So please, fade away, go away, and go keep hiking in the woods and try to find your soul because you lost it years ago. Okay. All right, now let's go to Spencer Woodman of The Intercept. Wait. No, wrong. I'm not doing that story. I'm going to hold off on that one. Okay. Vice News is reporting on some good news for us here. They explain Ohio cannot proceed with planned executions after a federal judge on Thursday ruled that the state's lethal injection method involving a controversial drug is unconstitutional. Ohio's go-to death penalty method relies on a three-drug protocol involving midazolam, the controversial drug at the center of a nationwide debate over capital punishment's constitutionality. Midazolam has been used in several problematic executions in Arizona, Oklahoma, Alabama, and Ohio. All right, so let me explain this in detail for everybody. Starting a while back, there was a European company that made the lethal injection chemicals. And so it's a three-drug cocktail, but they decided, you know what, we're not going to make it anymore because they don't have the death penalty in Europe. The overwhelming majority of modern nations, industrial nations, do not have the death penalty. And they said, we don't want to like take part in this anymore. So we're just going to not make it anymore. So it was a rare ethical decision by a company. Those are so few and far between. So in the U.S., we have the death penalty in many states. So they went, well, we still want to keep killing people. So I guess we got to come up with a new drug cocktail. So they went to, you know, these compounding facilities. That's the crazy part. Not even pharmaceutical companies. They go to the compounding facilities, which are, like, less sophisticated. And they go, okay, got to give us something that mimics this three-drug cocktail. So they came up with a few different things. They have a new three-drug cocktail. But it turns out this three-drug cocktail isn't as good as the other one. Now, by the way, there were questions about the other one, too. I remember covering stories where, you know, there's a chance that people felt pain, but they couldn't express that they're feeling the pain as they're getting the lethal injection because one of the three drugs is what's called a paralytic. So you sit there and you just look totally emotionless and you simply can't move, but you could be in extreme amounts of pain. So the old drug wasn't even necessarily great. It just might have masked the barbarism better. But this new one, I guess the paralytic doesn't work as well, or the drug that they give that's like a tranquilizer doesn't work as well, because what happened in many instances is some people like convulsed, some people were foaming from the mouth and making noises like... There was one instance, this is unbelievable that it happened last year, or it might have been 2 years ago, but it's unbelievable it happened recently, where they gave somebody the lethal injection doses, and then they called off the execution like 20 minutes into it because the guy wasn't dying. He was gurgling in pain and foaming at the mouth. They're like, oh, yeah, this is bad. Anyway, we're calling it off. It's cool. We're calling it off. And then he died like 6 or 7 minutes later. But it was over 20 minutes of excruciating pain where you tortured somebody before you killed them. Now, having said all that, I mean, it's obvious, right, that when this case, when these cases, when the Supreme Court got word of it, they went, whoa, we're doing an injunction and stopping all the executions with this drug cocktail because the Eighth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution protects from cruel and unusual punishment. And this is, by definition, cruel and unusual punishment. Not only are you killing somebody, you are torturing them before you kill them. So obviously that violates the Eighth Amendment. Obviously we're gonna stop the executions, right? Nope. They're like, yeah, I don't see the problem. Keep going. What? That might be the dumbest decision ever in modern times. Like, it is so clear that what you're doing is immoral, unethical, wrong, a violation of the Constitution, a violation of human rights. They're like, we don't care. We disagree, so we're gonna leave it. So. It continued. People kept using this new three-drug cocktail, which is very problematic, which has had so many problems. They're adjusting the dosages. Sometimes it works better. Sometimes it works worse. But this is like crazy. This is savagery. This is barbarism. And we're doing it right now. Well, now, finally, a federal judge in Ohio steps in and he goes, we're done with this. So, thankfully, a federal judge stopped it. Going to probably go to a higher judge, and then a higher judge might bring it back, and it might go through all the way to the Supreme Court again. Look, whatever the case is, even if temporary, it's great that we stopped it, but this is crazy. You can't torture people before you fucking kill them. That's by definition a violation of the Eighth Amendment. And furthermore, as we've discussed on the death penalty before, there was a study that found at least 4% of the people that are on death row are innocent. They didn't do it. So we're going to have a system in place where we murder people 4% of the time? Like, whoops, our bad, you were innocent and we killed you. The state killed you with tax money. No, you can't have that system. You've got to replace the death penalty with life in prison without the possibility of parole. Because guess what? Even in the instances where we all kind of want to see it, like with Dylann Roof, for example, it might even be bigger punishment to just have him rot away in a cell all his life and be there tortured by his own thoughts. And that might be better than giving him an out by saying, hey, you might get the death penalty. So... You just can't have a system that kills innocent people. I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with a system that fucking tortures people. And that's what this is. So it's a sad, sad reality. And it's good that this Ohio court stopped it, and it should be stopped permanently. Okay. All right, I'm out of time, guys. I hear the countdown, and it is what it is. 10 seconds I got. All right, I love you. I'll see you guys maybe on Monday, maybe not, because my birthday's on Tuesday, so I might take off Monday, but you'll know on Twitter. So, mwah. Peace, everybody. I'm out.